Welcome, Muskegon, Michigan. It is your show for Torn in Two for this April 5th, 2024. Hi, I'm your host, Gregory T. Roberts, with my partner, Pastor Melvin Burns. Twins at the end, double deuces. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, Brother Gregory T. How you doing today?
Brother, I'm doing great. Let me get some information out. We got an exciting show for everybody. Let's tell you, listen, first of all, what we need you to do is, this show is repeated on WVS and M106. You can watch these shows repeatedly. Also, do us a favor, share this information because we're the only show that is like talking to you about news, information, and more, the truth about what is happening. And speaking about what's happening, brother, what's the weather going to look like?
Well, I'm pleased to tell you that today we're going to have a low of 35 and a high of 46, partly cloudy. It gets better for the weekend. Low of 30, but a high of 53, sunny on Saturday. Sunday, partly cloudy, low 34, high of 54. As we get the work week started next week, we'll have a low of 41 and a high of 62. Tuesday, low 43, high 62. Things dip down a bit, 40, partly cloudy, low 40, high 57. And then next Thursday, cloudy day, low 44, high 55.
So there you go. That's the weather. We are so excited. We have to get right to the show. Listen, share this information on your site as well. If you're, again, if you're driving and would like to see the show later, please go to our sites, even YouTube. We're on YouTube as well. And we also have another Facebook called Torn In 2. Our guest today, who's our guest today, sir?
Well, folks need to listen. Man, this is an exciting show today. You know, they're all exciting. But our guest today is Holly Allway, who is the Injury Prevention Coordinator at Trinity Health Muskegon.
Put your hands together. There you go. Put your hands together. Put the cape on her like James Brown.
I'm ready. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Holly, how are you doing? Do us a favor. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, like you said, I'm the Injury Prevention Coordinator at Trinity Health. I've been there for over 20 years doing the same work, which is really just trying to keep kids and adults out of the emergency because of accidents. I am currently pursuing a doctoral degree. I should be finished with that in August. And after that, I might actually get some hobbies.
Wow. Congratulations. Listen, you said you've been doing this for 20 years?
Over 20 years. Yep.
So you said you want to keep people out of the hospital. Talk specifically how you're trying to keep them out.
Sure. So at Trinity Health, we have these injury prevention programs, and it's part of our community outreach. So what I do is look at the data that we get from our emergency and trauma admissions, and I figure out why are people being admitted, especially when it comes to unintentional injuries, so things you didn't anticipate. So car crashes, falls, you know, things like that. And then based on that information, I figure out what programs we need to provide in the community. So we have our child passenger safety programs, which is probably something a lot of your listeners are familiar with. Through those programs, we offer opportunities for families to come in and get their car seats inspected. If they need some help with car seats, we have resources to provide them with brand new car seats, all because we know that motor vehicle crashes are a leading cause of hospital visits here when it comes to unintentional injuries. And so that's when I say my job is to keep people out of the hospital. That's what I mean. Let's save the hospital for people that are sick. And when we can prevent injuries and prevent those hospital visits, that's what I want to do.
You're doing something also with gun safety, correct?
I am. We have been working on firearm injury prevention for several years. It was something that got started during the pandemic and has really grown. So in a lot of ways, I credit the pandemic for giving me the time to really dig into this issue and start making some programming moves around that. So I can talk a little bit about the history of it. So we have a physician here in, or a surgeon here in Muskegon, Dr. Stork, and he practices over at West Shore Urology. And I know it seems like a weird connection, but he was treating gunshot victims through his practice. And he was really interested in why he was seeing so many young men come into his practice for those gunshot injuries. And so he and a couple of physician students or residents started doing some research, and it really gave us the data to say we've got some issues in Muskegon and there's some things that we can do about it. And so that really was the start of the work that we did. And at the same time, we met Dr. Carter out of the University of Michigan and their Firearm Safety Institute there. And we were able to partner on some programming opportunities. So there's a lot going on. Which part would you like to talk about first?
Well, I'll tell you what, Pastor Melvin Burns, you answer that question.
Okay, I got so many questions. let me back up just a second. I'll come back to that, okay? So as you talked about the gunshots and the car accidents, what are some of the other leading preventable type, if I can say preventable type injuries that you see in Muskegon?
Right. When we look at our top three, they're typically motor vehicle crashes, falls throughout all age spans, just not older adults, but through the age span. And then violence related injuries. So I often will group firearm and other violence related injuries into one. Motorcycle crashes are another one that we see seasonally. Those tend to be the biggest unintentional injuries that we see in the emergency room and trauma department.
And so for Muskegon, was the you're saying the amount of gun violence, just gun violence, even violence toward youth was higher than a norm for an area like ours?
Yeah, so Muskegon unfortunately outpaces the state and outpaces the nation in terms of the rates of firearm fatalities in our county. And in particular, the part that really struck Dr. Stork and I when we looked at the data was that among young Black men, the rate of firearm fatalities is triple that of young white men. So there's very much a disproportionate or an equitable distribution of these firearm-related fatalities in injuries would be the same. And so that was of particular interest to us. So we need to do something about this, and we need to make sure that we're getting these programs and this information to the right people.
Okay. So there seemed to be, to me, just listen, there seem to be some distance between hospital and violence in the streets. So where do you come in? How do you bridge that gap to have an effect in the community?
So there's a couple things that we've done. One of the initiatives that we started early on was to partner with the American College of Surgeons. And so that for trauma is our certifying body. They come in and every 3 years assess us and make sure we're doing all the things we need to do as a level two trauma center. Mm-hmm. And we had the opportunity with the ACS to participate in the firearms violence data collection project. So we collect for our trauma patients basic information. This project gave us the opportunity to collect 30 to 40 additional data points. So we were really able to start looking at where do these firearms injuries occur, what neighborhoods, what zip codes, what streets, are they between two people that know each other, or are they between strangers, like what's really going on? And that, I keep coming back to the data, but I think it's so important to say what we're doing is led by the data, because that's the unbiased information that's out there. We know that firearms injuries and fatalities are a problem. We know that it's affecting particularly the Black community, but let's really look at it. And so when we do start to do these things, then we can measure how effective our interventions have been too. So that's the backside of what's going on with it. And then the bridge out to the community are through a couple different programs. So we started with the Sort Safe Initiative. And that is a partnership with medical professionals. So what we're asking is for providers that treat young children, typically through family or general pediatric practice, that at the 2 or 3 year old well child visit, they have an intentional conversation with parents around firearm storage. And we want them to be able to do that in a way, we're not passing judgment. This is a completely neutral, it's not political, it's a public health issue. That's, I think, of anything, the big shift that we're starting to see is that firearms injuries and violence and in general tends to be a very political issue, and it can be, but that's not where we're at with it. This is, to us, a public health issue. Right. And so we need to approach it as such. So we're asking those providers to have that conversation with families in the same way that they would do it about open water, right? Open water is another concern we have, particularly here in Muskegon, because we have all of this great Lake Michigan shoreline, and we have, you know, great access to other lakes and rivers. And so we normally talk to those families about, make sure that if you've got a pool at home, it's gated. Make sure you're actively supervising your child when they're in or around water. And we want to do the same thing around firearms is, you know, are you storing the firearms in your home securely? I don't want you asking if you have a gun in the house. I don't care about that. But what I want to know is, how are you storing it? Right. And if you're not storing it securely, how can I help you? Let's talk about why it's important. And if you need it, let me give you a couple of gun locks. You take them home and you use them. Now we've solved that problem, right? We're putting in barriers to prevent access, because that, especially when there are young children in the home, it's accidental access, right? Young children don't have intent. They're curious compared to older children who are impulsive. So there's kind of two different motivations there. So that was the first piece of it. So we had Dr. King at Muskegon Pediatrics, and then the providers at Hackley Community Care have hopped onto that effort. So when kids are coming in for that 2 or 3 year old well child visit, that's just a routine part of that screening.
Holly, now you've talked about a few things that we can do, but it takes a village to raise that child. What are some of the things that I know that's great what Trinity's doing, but what are some of the things that we should be doing? Like you talked about educating the children. But what are some of the things that we can do?
Well, you're absolutely right. Number one is knowledge. Knowledge is power. So let's make sure we're having those conversations. First of all, if you're a parent and you're bringing your kids over to somebody else's house, and it doesn't matter whose house it is, if it's grandma or grandpa's or friends or neighbors, have that conversation. And it's awkward, right, to say, how are you storing guns in your home? Are they stored securely? But it's so important. There was just that incident in Newaygo earlier this week where a child was at the grandparents' house, got access to a gun, shot and killed another child in that house. Wow. That could have been prevented had that question been asked, had those guns been stored securely. And it's a tragedy, and I feel for that family. That is an incredibly tough thing to go through. And so that's my passion, is I understand that these things are preventable, and I have access to the resources through Trinity support to make sure that they don't happen. I can get you in car seats. I can get you gun locks. I can get you bike helmets. That's the bridge from the hospital to the community, is being able to provide that education and being able to provide those safety devices that could prevent these types of tragedies. So number one would be, you know, have those conversations and educate around safe storage. In safe storage, I think it's important to start with a definition there, because we want to be clear about what that actually means. It doesn't mean up on a shelf in the closet. It means that the gun is locked up when it's not on your person. So cable lock, trigger lock in a gun safe, whatever your preferred method of securing it is, but it needs to be locked, and the kids need to not have access to that. So if you're using a keyed cable lock, don't leave the key in the cable lock. Put the key somewhere else. You know, we also encourage you to store ammunition separate of the firearm, not to store them, loaded or ready to go. So having those conversations and making sure all of the guns in the home are secured is very important in what that actually means.
How frustrating is it when people make this political?
I spent a lot of years not talking about firearm violence because it was so political, and it was very hard to have any kind of rational conversation around it. And from my perspective as an injury prevention coordinator, it's never been political. It's always been about public health and always about what can we do to make sure that all of these kids have the opportunity to grow up healthy and well and alive. And part of that is making sure that when we have guns in the home, they're stored securely.
Pastor Burns.
Holly, are we seeing, you know, you talked about the big ones nationally. Are we starting to see any kind of trends, so new things are starting to get on the radar screen that maybe weren't there before?
I have been looking at the data. So the unfortunate part is the data is always slow. It takes some years. Once the, you know, once that calendar year is over, it takes some time for that data to come out. But the, you know, the 5-year trends are still not encouraging. To be honest, we're still seeing a rise in firearm fatality rates. We're seeing a rise in the, like the absolute number of firearm fatalities. So I'm hopeful that we're going to start to see that change as the data that covers those years when we started our intervention starts to come out.
Okay.
That's true.
What about going back to vehicles? Are we still just not using seatbelts? Give us some of those statistics about how much safer people are with seatbelts. You think by now everybody gets that, but talk to us about seatbelts and car seats.
Yeah, well, I would love to say that we've figured out that seatbelts save lives, and we just haven't done that yet. Actually, I just got some information from the Michigan Office of Highway Safety Planning that says that seatbelt use rates are actually going down in areas of the state, including Muskegon County. So clearly we need to do a little more education and perhaps a little more enforcement as a reminder of why we need to wear seatbelts. But seatbelts do save lives. Car seats save lives as well. So we know that when a child is properly buckled into a car seat and that car seat is properly installed in the vehicle, it reduces fatality by up to 71%. So it makes a huge difference. I can't tell you the number of kids that I've seen come through our emergency and trauma department over the past years that were in a car crash, and maybe the parents were injured to the point where they were admitted, but the kids were checked out and sent home because they were properly buckled up in that car seat, and the car seat did its job. It kept those kids safe.
One thing, how frustrating being a former firefighter and I've seen this so many times. And the data truly states with people with motorcycles, and we're not trying to dictate your life, but helmets do work.
Absolutely. And we saw that data bear out in Michigan. So I'm old enough to remember that we used to have a helmet law in Michigan. And I remember when that helmet law was repealed. And we know, based on the data that we've collected since the repeal of that helmet law, that motorcycle fatalities have increased, and that increase is born among those motorcyclists that are not wearing helmets.
Wow, wow, wow. Pastor Burns.
Oh, you talked about, you know, the data and trends. Where are there things in a sort of in a narrative form that you kind of stand, you know, maybe you're waiting on the data to kind of present itself in some of these injuries?
You know, particularly we're interested now that we're making this big push on firearm injury prevention here in Muskegon. We're interested to see, you know, on a timeline where our efforts started and what we see occur in the data. So we can do some sort of like live time tracking with our, you know, our hospital data. We do have data around that, but really kind of looking at it over time, because we're still relatively new in these efforts. They're, you know, 1.5 to 2 years old. It's going to take some time. You know, I think about the Safer Teens intervention. We haven't even talked about that. So that is the partnership that we have with University of Michigan. And that was also born during COVID. We happened to be in a webinar, and I have been around long enough to not have any shame about asking any questions or asking for opportunities. And we asked Dr. Carter, you know, should any research opportunities come up where Muskegon would be a good fit, please keep us in mind, because we want to do something about it. We have to do something about it. And as it turned out, there was an opportunity to implement the Safer Teens program as part of a grant, as a part of a research project that he's working on. So we are 2 years into that. And we are, well, let me back up and say what Safer Teens is. So the idea behind Safer Teens is that if we start screening our adolescents around the issue of violence and then intervening with those kids that are screening positive for exposure to violence, that we have an opportunity to talk with them and help them understand how their choices affect themselves and how they affect others and really kind of give them that sense of there's, you know, there's immediate response, but those immediate responses can have some long-term consequences that you may not actually want. And so we started the Safer Teens intervention about, I believe that was about a year ago. We started, initial reports were about 20% success in screening adolescents in the ED. Now we're up to 50%. So it's taken us a little bit of time to get the process down, but we're getting there. You know, obviously the goal is to get to 100%, but the exciting part is we know based on Dr. Carter's previous implementations of Safer Teens that when we do this, we start to see reductions in violence related behaviors, in drinking, in general criminal activity among adolescents. So it's very positive for us to say, you know, we're at 50%, we're working towards 100, and we're expecting to see those declines in our community as we get better about implementing the Safer Teens program.
How important are developing those partnerships to you guys looking at the same goal, and how important it is to develop those partnerships?
It is absolutely critical that we have partnerships with our communities. One of the first partnerships that we worked on when we started looking at this issue of firearm safety was with the Social Justice Commission, because we knew that that group had been working on this issue for some time, and we really felt like they had the knowledge and history in the community connections to make a big difference for us. And so that was a very positive connection for us. Obviously, our relationship with the outpatient healthcare providers is important, and our relationship with the community is important, right? Because we need their buy-in to say, yeah, you know what, safe firearm storage is important because we don't want kids getting hurt. So I focused a lot in our conversation today about young children, but there's also the issue of older children, and like I said, they're impulsive, right? And when we think about older children and access to firearms, we're not just thinking about violence towards others, but we're also thinking about suicide risk. And so making sure when you have those teenagers in the house that you're preventing access to those lethal means. I think when you're a parent, you're acutely aware of that, but maybe when you're, you know, an aunt or a grandma to that child, to that teenager, you're maybe not thinking so much about it. So making sure, again, coming back to those conversations about asking how are you storing firearms in your house are so important, because we just want to limit access, because we know that limited access reduces those injury and fatality risks.
That's right.
I know we don't have a lot of time today, but would you just touch on a little bit as population ages, we're either moving with our parents or moving our parents in with us. Talk a little bit about the injury prevention area and older adults.
So that's a tough part, right? When yeah. Your parents start to get to an age where they need a little bit of care, and you're trying to be very respectful of that, but making sure that they're well cared for. So we particularly with our injury prevention program look at things that can help keep older adults safe at home. So you know, really falls is the biggest unintentional risk area in that population. And there are a lot of things that can go into fall risk. So it's not just the fact that we're getting older and our body isn't in the shape that it maybe once was, but there are also some other things. So health conditions can impact your fall risk. Certain medications can impact your fall risk. And so there are some things that we can do in terms of understanding what side effects of medications are, making sure we don't have multiple medications that maybe have an interaction that makes us more at risk for falls. And staying on top of that, the other issue that we look at is driving. We know that older drivers are at increased risk of injury and crash. And so looking at why that might be. So we have a program called CarFit, and we work with occupational therapists and physical therapists to go through the car with that older driver and just make sure everything is set up correctly for them. So I recently got a new car, and there were so many features on that car that it took me, because I went from an old car to a car that had technology in it, and it took me a while to figure out how to use all of those features. And so the same thing for older adults, and perhaps more so. So making sure that they understand all of the safety features in their vehicle and that they're set up correctly for them. So, you know, it could be as simple as if there are two drivers in that vehicle, just helping them understand, like, you know what, on newer cars, you can actually set two different seating position memories. And, right. You know, so you don't have to be, you know, perhaps the shorter woman driving from the older or from the taller adults. Drive seating position. So that's the CarFit program, but really just thinking about what are the adaptations that we can make in the vehicle and in the home to prevent falls and injuries.
Holly, we only have a few minutes here. Please tell people how they can get in touch with you and find out more information, whether it's your phone, email, or the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got multiple ways to get a hold of me. Whatever works best for you works for me. So on Facebook, you can find me at Safe Kids West Michigan. And that's, I'll post all of our upcoming events. I post lots of safety tips. So that's a great place to get a hold of me. You can give me a call at 231-672-4910. You can also email me alwayh@trinity-health.org. And then I also, if we've got just a couple minutes, I want to talk about that gun lock delivery program. Mm-hmm. So when Michigan's new law went into effect, we opened up a free gun lock delivery program, and we have had such tremendous response. So I've had 165 people request 574 gun locks in just a month.
Wow.
Is tremendous, and that is primarily just here in the county of Muskegon. So I still have gun locks available. So for everybody listening today, if you've got firearms in the home and you need gun locks, get a hold of me. So that website is www.storeitsafemuskegon.org, and there's a request form on there to, you know, just tell me name, address, how many gun locks you need, and we'll go ahead and get those delivered to you, or you can pick them up at the City of Muskegon Police Department. But I have been so thrilled with the response from the community on that gun lock program, because that I thought maybe I'd have, you know, maybe a dozen people get a hold of me, and to have over 160 get a hold of me has been fantastic. I'm thrilled.
That's nice. Holly, we want to thank you for being on the show today. Please, we need you to come back, because there is so much we need to talk to you about.
I would love it. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you guys today.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Take care. You too.
All right. All right. That's Holly. And man, can you believe that? How many guns?
You know, hopefully, you know, people, like she says, people remove the political side from it, and just, if you have guns at home, do it safely.
And you know, the one thing that she mentioned is having that conversation with your child going over to somebody else's house.
Yes.
You know, don't be shy. This is your child you're talking about.
Yes. Yes.
All right. It's 2:29. We're down at the bottom of the hour. We have a huge guest coming up. Listen, we're going to go to commercial break. You are watching and listening to Torn In Two on 103.7, The Beat, and M106. Welcome back to Torn In Two on 103.7, The Beat, and M106 with Pastor Melvin Burns II and your host, Gregory T. Roberts. I want to go back a couple years. I won't say how many, but I want to go back a couple years. but I decided to run for the 92nd seat in Muskegon, there were a couple people that motivated me to take on that role. And one person was your father, Pastor, who was quite motivational. But the second person, I am so proud to introduce, because you saw the work that he did in Kent County as a commissioner, and I followed him closely, and he just worked really hard in what he believed. I am so happy to have this man, Dr. Paul Mayhew. Put your hands together for him as we welcome him to the stage. How you doing, sir?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Dr. Paul Mayhew, tell us a little bit about yourself. We got so much to talk about.
Oh my goodness, you guys, y'all get to my heart when I talked to the owner, and he said, "I said, man, I'm gonna try to give you something for." He said, "Man, don't you even say nothing about that." He said, "For what you have done for this community." It just about made me cry, you know, because I didn't think people were paying attention a lot. I know some people were, but it's so powerful. It's so powerful. Now, to be able to just leave a book documenting some of how we do things and how people can arrive at power positions in this community, in this statewide community, because we worked in the whole state. I remember coming to Muskegon trying to help us establish a Black Caucus. We worked in the whole state. And this brother's, Brother Roberts, his dad was an influence on me. I think Roy was your dad, right? Is that?
He's my uncle.
Your uncle, Roy, was so his uncle, your uncle, influenced me a lot.
Not only were people watching, you inspired people. And the thing is not only did you stay in County, like you said, you came out of Muskegon, and I was in some of those meetings where it was get out the vote,
yes,
or it was Black Caucus,
yes,
or whatever. You just didn't stay in your community. You were all over trying to advance, whether it was voting or information, and you inspired a lot of us.
Wow, that's powerful, because I remember riding with Muskegon and Detroit and the Pontiac. And Pontiac is where we put together the Rainbow Coalition to get out to vote for Jesse. Hmm. We put that together in Pontiac. And with brother attorney Walters, attorney Walters, and we put that. We organized statewide precinct delegates all over the state. Got them. We ended up into San Francisco. Yeah, we ended up in San Francisco, and it was a statewide organization. We just organized precinct delegates all over the state.
Wow. Pastor Burns.
Yeah.
Dr. Mayhew, I know we haven't had the pleasure of meeting with, which doesn't mean I also don't know your work. Talk to us, you sit down and write a book. What is it you want people to get, I'm sure the historical accounts, but what is it you want people to get from your book?
What I want them to get from the book, that we cannot be so hung up on what happens that it prevents us from moving forward.
Okay.
Because sometimes you run into people that are out there that trick you, and they try to trip you up. Then you discover it, and then you get hung up, and then you get lost in the minutia of being, man, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with that because this person's there, this person's there. But the cause has got to go on. The cause of Christ and the cause of us working together. When Jesse put together when the Jackson campaign came together, the Operational Unity campaign, and that didn't come just from Jesse. It came from one of the activists before Jesse that Operational Unity came. But when that campaign came, it was a breath of fresh air because it meant that I didn't have to sit around in the room with you or wait on anybody to give me instructions about how to move.
Come on.
Because Operational Unity meant that we got some instructions in our head that tells us that when this time comes, this is what we have to do.
Another brother in struggle. Doctor, I want you to talk a little bit about the, you know, back in the day, we had a tribe. We had people helping, in, like yourself, coming over, and we worked together like a village. But we've lost that. We lost. Talk how important that is for us having that structure of unity.
Oh, that is the whole, the Operational Unity would mean that Reverend Pinckney down in, let's see, where's Reverend Pinckney at? But Reverend Pinckney, I call his name. We work with Reverend Pinckney out of, I don't know what, he's part of the Michigan group too. And Reverend Pinckney, we all got together and helped him deal with some NAACP issues, you know, in the state. Now, he doesn't live in Grand Rapids. And then he called me and said, well, you know, it was a young person that got killed in Grand Rapids. He called, Reverend Pinckney called me and says, your Farrakhan's going to come to the community and deal with this issue that when the person got drowned here in Grand Rapids, one of the ministers, he said, Paul, Farrakhan's coming. He wants you to be there. So I was sitting there in the audience. When Farrakhan come into the court downtown, he just stuck his hand out, shook my hand, and acknowledged, that made me acknowledge the fact that he talked to Pinckney. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's really important that we understand what's going on in the community, and when the tentacles come up, and it's that time to do it, then we know that we gotta go and do what we gotta do. Mm-hmm. Now, if we try and organize on a precinct level, we know every even year in this state, you run for precinct delegate. Every even year, you run for precinct delegate. So I'm talking with the people about, if you want to have power in the political structure, you got to have a man corner. It's just, I'm a preacher. I was a pastor at one point, but the pastor can't preach without an amen corner.
Come on now.
he can't preach without somebody saying, amen. You got to have some truth in what you're saying, because somebody got to say amen.
Not only have some truth, but have some knowledge about what's being preached.
Right. Right.
Hey, Anthony Miller, we want to acknowledge you. Afternoon to you as well. Okay. Pastor Burns.
Dr. Mayhew, talk a little bit about, you know, we have the people that, some of the causes you talk about, and then it's someone like yourself who kind of go from working those causes to even holding an elected position. Talk a little bit about, you know, the going from that sort of organizer level to, you know, maybe some people see you on the other side because you're now holding an elected office. Talk about that a little bit.
By not holding an elected office?
So by eventually, like, becoming like you were a county commissioner. Years. Well, those two just oppose each other.
Yeah. Well, being right now, in terms of not being an elected official, I missed the bully pulpit that I helped use to get things done. Mm-hmm. Because you got to be able to have the bully pulpit to turn things, you know, so that you can influence the mindset. And that's what we're trying to do, is influence the mindset. We want people, I mean, you talk to gang members. Well, I mean, the biggest gang members, you got precinct delegates that, it ain't gangs, but you got precinct delegates that think alike and work together, you know, and they get influenced. Gang members, they do the same thing. But they don't know that they can become precinct delegates and have political power and move their community and help their community as opposed to tear it down.
Talk a little bit, man, well, so deep. Talk a little bit, a little bit further about the older generation getting back to our younger generation to get them involved in this situation.
Yeah. We have to be able to believe that some of the people in our young generation want to do it. See, because sometimes you just write people off because, oh, these young folks, they out there doing this and doing that and whatever. But my thing was that if I had somebody to come to me, I want to send them back away from me in a righteous way. Mm-hmm. I want to be kind to them. If they let me be kind, I'm going to be kind. You know, I want to be able to teach them a nugget or two. So when they come, I wanted to be able to teach you a nugget or two before you leave me. Now, I ain't going to wait. The other day, I was walking down the street, and the lady was walking down the street, and she was kind of distressed, and I knew her daddy. And I said, how you doing? She was kind of crying. She said, this just happened to my daughter. I said, let me pray for you right now. I prayed for her right at the corner of Wealthy and Lafayette Street in Grand Rapids and kept walking. You know, don't know the result of it, but I did what God called me to do. You know, pray now.
Yes.
You know, and keep things in perspective right now, because it's the now that you get the intention. So this, I don't know what happened to the situation, but it could end up powerful because it might have helped her son, is what she was concerned about.
Dr. Paul Mary, I have another question, then we're going to go to Pastor Burns. How frustrating is it for you, especially with the new political climate, that people are so buried in and not looking for the truth of the situation? They're just buried into a name without looking at a person's record and just voting without looking at the truth.
It is very disturbing to me that type of stuff happens, you know, because we talk about the person that I think that we're talking about. And, you know, I could call his name, but if we continue to call his name, we keep continuing to summons him up. But we had this event in Grand Rapids. And now I talk about the Hatch Act. Well, if you know about the Hatch Act, you can't do political stuff and mix that with the Hatch Act. Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't so much that he violated the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act was violated by all those officers that showed up, because you got state money, state and federal money that's being paid to them, not him. Mm-hmm. So he knows how to keep himself clean. But the Hatch Act applied to all those police officers and officers that were sitting there on that stage rallying him on. That's where the Hatch Act is. The Hatch Act is for that.
Mm-hmm. Gotta go to the board. Anthony Miller says, amen.
Amen.
We agree with you. Pastor Burns.
I just happened to catch that news story about that event. I'd love to talk about that some more, because you couldn't find a better violation and what that act was intended to do.
Right.
And the thing is, for years, people like us walked that straight line to ensure that when we weren't in public office, we didn't violate that. But here we see just being run over. But let me ask another question about you personally, Dr. Mayhew. You know, you could have chosen probably do a lot of things. You're a very bright man. What made you decide you're going to be part of the struggle? You're going to put yourself out there? And I know that comes with criticism and skepticism by people. What made you decide that you decide you're going to be another brother in the struggle?
Well, and that's a good question. You know, when I was born back down south, my first fight was with a mosquito. Mosquito got into my mosquito net in Arkansas. You know, in Arkansas, it's a bunch of mosquitoes. And I had to fight that mosquito to keep me, to keep that mosquito from biting me. So then we continue to transpose and deal with Arkansas. My dad, who was born in Water Valley, Arkansas, down there, was on hangman's noose. They were going to hang Reverend Frank Mayhew. Now, he was a street corner preacher, you know, talked to people about the farm, about how to farm and how to, and the need for subsidies for black farmers. This is back in the 40s, you know. So they was going to hang him because he was the double cotton picker and picked with both sacks and made double money. So they got to cheating him out of his money. Then he got to speaking up about it. And so when he spoke up about his money, they said, you one of them uppity Negroes. Wow. We're going to have to hang you. So they set him up in the hangman's noose in a place in Water Valley. And then somebody in the crowd said, cut that nigger down.
Wow.
They cut him down. He got down. He had to hit the floor. He had to walk from Water Valley, Mississippi to Osceola, Arkansas. Now, that's where he met my mama at, in Osceola, Arkansas. Okay. But then, so things settled down there for a little bit. Then we got a house. Then I can remember Klan finding him again. After they found him again, after they found him again, the Klan came to the house. Came to the house and just was, they burnt the cross in the front of our house. I was about 4 or 5 years, between 3 and 5 years old when I saw him burnt the cross. You know, so that's I think that in the back of my mind what set me on my journey of doing righteous. I think that's what begin to affect me, because I looked out there and there were so many people out there with their cross burning.
Now, you have put together a book, Another Brother in the Struggle. Talk to us a little bit about the book.
Okay, the Another Brother in the Struggle chronicles what happened to us from down south to my coming into to Grand Rapids and my school age stuff. I can remember, you know, the book, you know, we talk about the school to prison pipeline. Well, I was a young man when I was in grade school that liked to read upside down, my feet up. And so I'd sit back near the wall and put my feet up and read. They began to think that I need to go to trade opportunity, TO. My mother came and said, well, if the boy is reading, then let him read. And then by the time I get to ninth grade, so this is how they track you. By the time I get to ninth grade, they give me the eighth and ninth grade, they give me the IQ test. So I get the IQ test, and then my IQ test comes up. He's a moron. So I'm supposed to be scheduled to go to prison. Go to jail for the rest of my life,
right?
Because they want to put me in this category, but God saw different. He saw different and said, not this. So he made me what I am today. God made me. And so that's why I began to, you know, speak out. They said I did this all in high school. You know, speaking out, I ran track, played football, played basketball. But then this particular path of being in the political arena, you know, came as a result of all the ancient stuff that happened in my head, that happened with my daddy, and then seeing all the racism and classism and all that stuff coming up. And then I said, I've got to be able to effectuate some of this. in my way, in the way that God has taught me to do.
Dr. Paul, just so much stuff that I want to talk to you about. But talk to the people right now that have gone weary and the system doesn't work. Voting doesn't work. They're going to do what they want to do anyway. I'm just going to stay home. Talk to those individuals that just want to stay home and not get in the struggle.
We have to be in the struggle. Because if you don't, you're part of the struggle, but you're the dead part of the struggle. You ain't going to get out of the struggle. Because when you go to the store and the prices are high, and you can't afford to buy your meat and your bread, you are part of the struggle. So you can't get out the struggle. But we can effectuate it by organizing and continuing to organize. Organizing our precinct delegates, organizing our block club. I started out with the Acorn group in one instance. Acorn, I chaired the Acorn People's Platform Committee and the Acorn Political Action Committee. We went to, in 1980, we had a 2080 campaign. And in that 2080 campaign, we took delegates from all over the state of Michigan to New York. And in New York, Jesse was just on the rise at that point in time. So we supported Jesse in 1980 because we told the delegates in New York, and I was there in New York, and we told them that if Jesse don't speak, he's walking out. Mm-hmm. That was a black and white coalition, mind you, that put that together and said, if Jesse don't speak, we walking out of this convention. That was in 1980. Mm-hmm. But now Jesse speaks. Jesse organized the rainbow after 1980. He still speaks, mm-hmm. You know. But we, Conyers, Congressman Ford, mm-hmm. Paul Tips, all of us got together with the Acorn movement and said, if Jesse don't speak, we're walking out. Mm-hmm. Jesse spoke at that 1980 convention. Also, I met Mrs. Kennedy there, the matriarch of the Kennedy family. She taught me how to use my hands to talk. I was speaking with her and told her my goal. She said, you got to use your hands. Because if you don't use your hands, sometimes people don't know how emphatic it is because you're not showing that with your hand and your movement.
That's good. Pastor Burns.
Ask me some more questions. Oh, golly. This is great.
Yeah. You've spent a lot of time, you know, fighting for us, our people, and for righteous causes. When you look sort of into the future, what do you see that you're optimistic about and what things concern you?
Well, what concerns me right now is the violations of the Constitution. You know, now the Constitution ain't perfect. We know it ain't perfect, but I don't want to change.
Right, right.
I don't want to become under dictatorship. Mm-hmm. I don't want to change. So what really concerns me now is the idea that there's so many people out there that want to follow a dictator. Now we know about dictatorship. Mm-hmm. You have in your family, authoritarian grandfathers, mm-hmm. authoritarian grandmothers, mm-hmm. but sometimes we had to rebel against the authority so that we could get our stuff in. Mm-hmm. So now we're in a situation where we got dictators trying to take over the government. That is nothing that we should have, not in America. Not the America that I know.
Right. America. Let me go to the board, Mr. Mayhew. Nice to meet you, and thank you for sharing your history with us today from Anthony Miller.
Thank you. Thank you guys for calling me and putting me on. And I hope that I do have a copy of my book. That's it. I know you saw it. And so you can contact me at 616-340-8788 or Paul Mayhew at att.net.
Now, Dr. Paul, I got a question for you. I got a couple more minutes.
Okay.
In my neighborhood right now, all the streets and everything is being replaced and stuff like that. And you know, one of the reasons why, I'm going to tell you why, because this neighborhood votes. There are other neighborhoods that don't vote, and guess what? Services are not rendered. Tell people that how important it is to get out there and to change things. I mean, speak emphatically about it, because it frustrates me when we do political coverage and it's the same old numbers where people do not vote, they stay home, and nothing is happening in their neighborhood.
You're right, because you got to go vote, you know, especially the city commissioners. A person needs to be able to go down to the city commission and speak their piece. Go down to the county commission and speak your piece. And then organize. While you're organizing, for those particular issues that come dear to you. That's why you organize. So you want more than just you to speak that piece. You want the whole community. If we agree on something, let's go downtown and let downtown know that we agree. If it's a tax, we don't want the tax. Mm-hmm. If it's something that we needed, and it is a tax, then we want it. But we have to be able to say collectively what we are doing and how we want it done.
That's right.
And then get on the committees that mm-hmm. deal with it. So you can't just stop there. You got to be able to get on those committees that deal with the issues make your voice heard.
That's right.
Dr. Mayhew, what would you say to this younger generation? What is it you want them to hear you say most and stick with them if they catch this program today?
What I wanted them to hear me say is let's hang up our hang-ups and move our communities forward. I can't afford to not like you. I can't afford to dislike you. I got to be able to hang up my hang-ups and then move forward. I don't want you blocking me, you know, so hang that hang-up up, because I ain't going to block you, especially if I see you doing something righteous. I ain't not going to block you. So we got to hang up our hang-up and then move us forward. It'll pay off.
Dr. Paul,
I had some experience in it.
The book again, let's get that book up again, is another brother in the struggle. It can be purchased on Amazon. There's the information right there. Doctor, let me just say, I know you're a busy man, but there's so much that we need to talk about, especially this year. Can we get you back on the show? Because there's a lot of issues that need to be talked about.
Sure you can. Sure you can. I'd love to be. I am so appreciative to be on this show. And sure you can. And so I have a book signing tomorrow. Oh, shoot. You know how these old thoughts is. But I got a book signing tomorrow. And okay. I could send that out to you and let you know exactly where it's at.
All right. Send that information out to us. Dr. Paul Mayhew, we got to end the show, but thank you so much and God bless you, sir.
And thank both of you guys. I appreciate it. And thank DeVos. Yeah. I appreciate it. Amen. I appreciate it.
Welcome.
That was Dr. Paul, man. I'm emotional. I'm torn over here.
Man, there's so much more I love to talk about. Just chop it up about some things going on today. And he brought us some really good points that, you know, we need to be talking about. Wow.
Yeah, and we got to get him on, because there is so much stuff that the stuff that he brought up about the Constitution. But listen, it's 3:00 and we have got to end the show. But listen, there's so much. Go out there. You've heard Dr. Paul talk. You heard Holly talk about how important it is that you go out there. In other words, sow a seed, give people information that may change your life. You never know who you might be touching. I'm Greg Roberts. That is Pastor Melvin Burns II. We'll see you next week. Take care. This is Tori. God bless. See you next.